A lot of public figures have been telling us how we're all in this together and how the virus doesn't care if you're rich or poor. They're saying it's the great equalizer. But as we learn more and more about the coronavirus, the data is telling us a different story. Lower-income Americans are feeling the brunt of the pandemic. The elderly have died in higher numbers. People of color have been disproportionately affected. You've sent us many questions asking about health disparities and treatments against the virus. So here with answers is Dr. Tracy Henry, an assistant professor of medicine and an assistant health director at Grady Primary Care Center in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome, Dr. Henry. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me this evening.
Well, as a primary care physician, you've been seeing a lot of COVID-19 patients. What are some of the trends that you've observed over the past couple of months?
Well, you know, there definitely have been some challenges with COVID-19, especially in our vulnerable population. And since primary care visits have went virtual or audio only, we're only talking to patients via the phone, there were a lot of patients who actually went without reliable access to a phone or internet. And so they weren't able to engage with their primary care doctor in a regular fashion like many of our other patients. And there were other trends that we also have seen that on a different note that some patients, we actually saw a higher show rate for some of our patients because they were virtual visits. And what I mean by that is that virtual visits actually remove some of the barriers that many of our patients face, like transportation barriers. During COVID-19, there was no copay, and so there was a financial barrier that was removed. And then also many of our patients didn't have to take off of work. And even if they were working, the virtual visits were only 15 to 20 minutes, and so they were able to still have the needed healthcare access they needed while actually doing it on their job.
That's interesting. And what about now that the stay-at-home orders in Georgia have been lifted? I mean, we mentioned earlier in this program that Georgia was one of the first states to kind of roll back those restrictions. What are you seeing now? And I think a lot of people would be particularly interested in seeing whether you're seeing an increase in sick patients.
Well, you know, there still is a concern since our COVID cases are not negligible. But there's always a chance that we can see an uptick in the number of cases. And you know, as a society, we may become relaxed. So we reopened and so we relaxed and we stopped doing some of the great things that we were doing before, like physical distancing, practicing good hand washing, and wearing our mask in public.
So let's jump to the first question. Here it is.
Hi, my name is Leslie Gregory, and I practice medicine in Portland, Oregon. And I want to know how best, as a provider focusing on marginalized communities, we can get our action steps into the hands of those who have the power to implement them.
Dr. Henry, you have some advice for your colleague?
Yeah. Sure. Well, certainly one of the best ways to help our patients, especially those that she mentioned in marginalized communities, and to also have the broadest impact on the largest number of people, is healthcare advocacy. So we need a call to action, as she stated. We cannot simply wait to study the effects of COVID-19 when all the damage is done. So we need ongoing data. We need ongoing collection of race and ethnicity. And ideally, I would like to see is that all stakeholders come together, patients, health professionals, hospitals. So we can there develop a plan with targeted interventions that can be supported by our policymakers.
T from Massachusetts wrote in to ask, why are more men than women dying of COVID-19? Have you seen that, doctor?
Yes, I actually have seen that in practice. But the quick answer is we do not know. But there have been many, many proposed theories. And so what we do know is that men have a higher prevalence of comorbidities such as heart disease and high blood pressure. And all of those risk factors together equate to a poor outcome with patients with COVID-19. But there is ongoing research looking at to explain some of that disparity and what we're seeing in men versus women.
And of course, the data about showing that African Americans have a higher death rate than whites and in even Latinos and Asians as well. What do you, are you seeing that in your practice?
Well, in general, I'm not necessarily seeing the higher death rate in my particular practice, but what we have known, at least from the studies that have that we've seen so far, is that there are a higher death rate, and that has been attributed to some of the issues that are experienced by racial ethnic minorities. Many of them are unable to properly social distance. Many of them are working in places where they're on the front line and they're unable they have to take public transit, for instance. And so those are some of the reasons that are all leading to them particularly having issues in their community.
Here's a related question. This comes from Katrin in Palmetto, Florida. Here it is.
While not wanting to diminish in any way the effect of COVID-19 is having on minority communities of all types, I was wondering in what way this was affecting poor communities in general as opposed to better off neighborhoods and communities.
Dr. Henry, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. In general, people in resource poor communities or from low socioeconomic status are just more likely, like I said before, to have low paying jobs that do not allow them to work from home. And so they're using public transportation to get to and from work, further exposing them to the coronavirus by being in these public places. Additionally, a lot of these patients are working in service-related industries. So they could be environmental services, food services, supermarkets, gas stations. And so they're not able to take paid sick leave. So if they get sick, if they're laid off, they're left without health insurance and without the needed access to health care that they need.
I have a question for you from Kathy in Ypsilanti, Michigan, and she's asking for a lot of detail. I'm not sure you're going to be able to give her the level of detail that she wants, but we'll just see. We'll do the best we can. How about that? Here it is.
Okay.
What's the best way to care for oneself and your loved ones when someone has the virus? Please go over step by step the way to give someone the best care, food, fluids, over-the-counter meds, et cetera, and when to give them. Thank you.
Doctor, what can you tell her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the way I like to approach this is to put her strategy into three different buckets. So number one, just providing support to her loved one for their basic needs. And then number two, watching for warning signs of the loved one getting worse. And number three, to protect herself. And then, she wanted some really step-by-step details, but getting more granular, I would say, and helping her loved one's most basic needs, do their shopping for them, their groceries, feeding their pets, big things like making sure they're taking their medicines, picking them up from the pharmacy if they need to, making sure they stay hydrated and are eating. In terms of watching for the warning signs, if you're at home with a loved one with coronavirus, is checking the vitals. And what I mean by that is their temperature. Make sure you have a thermometer at home. Make sure that you've purchased one of these pulse oximeter, which you can check their oxygen levels and their breathing levels at home. And we want that number to be above 92%. And then most importantly, if their symptoms worsen in any way, if they see anything out of character, just to make sure that you call 911 and you get your loved one the help that they need. So that could be chest pain.
I think you've given her a lot of help. We appreciate that. That's Dr. Tracy Henry. She's an assistant professor of medicine and an assistant health director at Grady Primary Care in Atlanta.